Take a network break. Pass around the virtual donuts, pour some coffee, and get your weekly dose of IT and tech news. I'm Drew Conry Murray, and with me is Greg Farrow. Before we start, we have a couple of sponsor messages. This episode of Network Break is being sponsored by Apstra and the Intent to Party Party. If you're going to Cisco Live this June, you can join Apstra and the Packet Pushers at a live event on Monday the 26th at the Border Grill for drinks, food, and great conversation. To request an invitation, just go to go.apstra.com/event-packet-pushers-party. This episode is also being sponsored by ThousandEyes. They deliver visibility into every network your organization relies on, from your data center to the cloud. You can quickly and precisely pinpoint the root cause of network issues wherever they occur. Sign up for an account at ThousandEyes.com/packetpushers, and you can monitor 3 locations for free and choose a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. All right, to the news. Greg, I spent all of last week at HPE Discover, and there was a lot going on.
Oh, you are such a jet setter, Drew.
I'm traveling, I'm whining and dining.
You know, just rock on back from Las Vegas like nothing else, and you just cruise on into the network break like there's no,
That's right.
Just totally chilled out, right?
Pretty much rolled off the plane and into the network break, yes.
Oh, what a legend. Like, listen to that professionalism. It's coming out of your pores. So tell me, HPE Discover is always like all big vendor conferences. They save up all their big announcements. They put a big plug in their mouths and stop talking about everything to try and make their conferences look important in the nicest possible way. And no doubt HPE did the same thing for their Discover conference. Tell me what happened at the show.
Yeah, they had a lot going on. The big thing that jumped out to me is Aruba, which is an HPE company. They rolled out a new core switch. They're essentially setting it up as a competitor to the Catalyst 6500 and, of course, other core switches. But they call that the Catalyst in particular. And the big news here is that they've essentially redesigned the OS. And they're building a database inside it so that it's constantly capturing telemetry information and it's all API enabled. It's got an onboard analytics engine so you can do all kinds of automation and it's all the goodness.
Ah, so it's not just a switch then. So what you're saying is like Arista with their changes around their EOS
Yes. And
their cloud vision, they've got this telemetry analytics thing coming along and Aruba's moving down the same sort of path?
Sort of. It's a brand new OS. It's just for this switch, the 8400 line. This OS isn't being ported to their other switch line yet. But it is essentially like an Arista model in that it's got that onboard database, all of the daemons, all of the functions that run inside the switch, put their state into that database. And if some routing protocol goes down, when it comes back up.
Now that sounds like SysDB. So what Arista talks about with SysDB, there's a central database where everything is. And then the operating system runs, all the apps run around that, updating the database as they crawl around. And that's, of course, is the way Cisco iOS was architected. That's one of the patents that Cisco's beating up Arista around here. Like the idea of having one database under your apps is like a revolution, like a total innovation.
Right.
Yeah. Like that's just how every application has been designed for like 30 years.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So the big thing they're promoting is that, you can actually grab a web GUI and get right into the switch itself to look at all the operational goodness. You can also write and load Python scripts to run on the box if you want to do any kind of automation or reporting. So they're very excited about it, and we'll see what kind of traction they get. Amy Renee, who you may know as Amy Engineer on Twitter, was also there, and we were talking about it, and she said, whenever somebody says, we made a new OS, she always gets a little anxious because there's issues around stability and reliability, and are they pushing this on the customers to test bugs? That's always a concern. But Aruba was saying, yes, we've tested this very heavily and don't worry about it. But the also issue is when you're trying to convince someone to pull out a core switch and swap it in with something new, that's kind of a big ask.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things here. One is the days of it being very hard to make operating systems is over. And building apps is not hard if you're using a modern tool chain. So I think what Arista proved to us is that it's not an insurmountable 30-year challenge to build a networking product.
Certainly not, particularly when you can start, and I think they did, from a Linux core, essentially.
Yeah, and if they haven't had to do the silicon as well, so I'm guessing this has got some merchant silicon inside?
I asked about silicon, they would not say, I think.
In other words, it might be so there's rumors around that there's another generation of silicon coming from all the vendors, and maybe it'll be that silicon.
I don't know, but they were closed mouth. That was the one thing they would not discuss.
Okay, so maybe it's unannounced silicon then. I doubt if it's custom. I can't imagine that they would make
a chip. I can't imagine they would build a chip for that, no. So I
tell you how I could work this out. If it was custom silicon, they'd tell us.
Right.
And if it was merchant silicon that was shipping, they'd tell you.
Okay.
So logically, it has to be somebody's merchant silicon that's not yet shipping.
Could be.
Or it must be close to shipping, yeah. Because if you've gone to all the trouble of designing and building a silicon chip for this, you'd certainly want to be crowing about it.
You absolutely would. You absolutely would. But I don't see Aruba as having that in their bailiwick about doing custom silicon design. So I'm assuming it's merchant, but your reasoning strikes me as logical.
Yes, and it's also worth pointing out that Aruba's been practicing making operating systems. They have the campus switches that they took on. So once they took over HP's ProCurve range, they do have some history around here of building operating systems at reasonable success levels. But it has to be said that building chassis is quite difficult and not necessarily as easy as it sounds. So yeah, right to be cautious, I think, but not sort of wait 10 years cautious.
No, not at all. No, 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 no.
Or wait 5 years. I think it's going to be, you know, a lot closer than it needs, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm curious to see the reaction because I do feel like they're trying to push the market a little bit with this. It's not coming out until the fall, so there's time for us to dig into it and look at it a little bit more and for folks to play around with it. But it's also exciting, I think, for Aruba to be trying to push out its portfolio outside the campus and the edge and get into that core.
Well, I think one of the things we've seen the analyst firms talking about is that there's still a lot of Catalyst 6500 out there. And I was chatting to some people in our Slack channel, and they all piped up and said, yeah, we still have 6500s. And I was over in the Reddit group, and they were saying, yeah, we're just starting to switch off our Cat 6500s now. So you might laugh and say, you know, but maybe there just is an awful lot of them out there, and the migrations away from them haven't actually happened yet. So, and this is a product that's going to be, because that time when you switch off your Cat 6500 is a time to go and test the market and see
exactly
if there's something else out there. Yeah.
That could be good timing for Aruba then.
Yeah, well, that explains why they got rid of Comware too. So remember they sort of sold Comware back to Tsinghua in China, and now Aruba's got its own switches. So maybe this has been in the pipeline for some time.
It seems like, yeah, this is something you don't take on lightly.
Yeah, and the analytics engine is really interesting. So this idea of that telemetry and visibility is useful. It's going to be very good for the Wi-Fi too. For very large Wi-Fi installations, that'll be an interesting tool for them.
Right. If you're actually running Aruba from the access point all the way down to the core switch, there's some interesting visibility things you could do.
Yes. And ClearPass also.
Right. Yeah. ClearPass and test. Yes.
Yeah. So if you want to start seeing, so what we're seeing, for example, with Cisco's Campus Fabric, I was reading up on their Campus Fabric, which is Lisp based. And a big part of that for Cisco is their integration with their SGT technology to do end-to-end security authentication in the campus. I'm sort of ambivalent about the use of Lisp to build a campus overlay, but there's some possibilities that I think it's going to be a very complicated way to do something when they should just focus on BGP EVPN. But good to see. This is interesting. I mean, you would have thought that switching was almost over and everybody had given up. And yet here we are, another chassis switch.
That's right. The other thing is I feel like the overall message I got coming out of HPE is that this almost feels like their coming out party, because obviously they've made the divestiture from HPE Inc. in their own business, but they also had to go through a lot of reorganization. They sold off some old business units. They got rid of some product lines. They did some new acquisitions. And now it feels like the company has kind of like dusted off its hands and says, all right, now we're ready. We're in. And they laid out this strategy vision that I think is going to drive the company forward.
Okay. So now we've got a clear sense of where they're going to go. So what does that look like?
From Meg Whitman on down, every executive we talked to was very on message about the three core pillars of their strategy. The first is to make hybrid IT easier. And by hybrid IT, they mean customers are going to be running a mix of workloads on private cloud and in public cloud, and they want to do what they can to make that simpler for folks. And they're driving that with their Simplivity, which is their hyperconverged solution, and their Synergy, which is what they call a composable infrastructure. Composable is their new favorite buzzword, where you can run a mix of VMs and containers and bare metal in the same box, essentially.
When they announced Composable, I was at Discover in London a year or two ago, and they announced Composable. I couldn't quite make sense of that. And effectively, it looked very hardware-centric then. Is there much more software to it now? It looked like, here's our new generation of servers, and we're just going to call them Composable because of something. And I couldn't get grip of it. Is that what you're seeing now?
I think it is at this point still kind of hardware centric, but another thing they announced, which isn't one of the core pillars, but it fits into this hybrid IT model, is something called Project NewStack, which is, I'm trying to still wrap my head around it, but it's essentially like an initiative to help IT track their private and public cloud use cases and spending. But it's also supposed to have like a service catalog element, so you can have an environment for your developers that has been approved by IT that they're using, and just your usual, you know, virtual machine and container workloads. And maybe that's supposed to be the software layer that runs sort of on top of, not to control Simplivity or Synergy, but to provide sort of a management layer on top of, not an orchestration, but sort of a management and overview layer. So maybe that's how they're gluing it all together.
Yeah, once you've built your converged / hyperconverged platform, So now you've got your ES, but you still haven't got what's in the VMs or your container orchestration or something like that. You still need something above that that brings your storage and your compute and your network all together, no?
Yeah, I think that's not what Project NewStack is for. They're going to let Synergy do that, and they're going to let Simplivity do that. And NewStack is more about, we're going to build this environment where if you want to run Kubernetes on a private cloud internally, you can do that, and NewStack will sort of monitor that for you and let the business lines look in, or a management look in and see what's going on, you know, provide this safe, secure environment for developers. I don't think it's an orchestration or more software glue layer.
Mm, okay, so they're not going to get into cloud orchestration. Okay, fair enough. So then IoT, I mean, that seemed to be bandied around a lot.
Yeah, the second pillar is the intelligent edge, which is how they're defining IoT, putting that compute out at the local area, like on a factory floor or on an oil rig, where you need some kind of local processing of all the sensor data to get some real-time results back, and then pump the rest of it up to a cloud or some other offsite. So they're very much focused on seeing this as a growth market. This is going to help them drive their compute business. And I think if I had to take a shot for every time somebody mentioned the word IoT, I would have died of alcohol poisoning. They're very in on IoT.
Sorry, what was that? I'm just over here in my spreadsheet talking about edge computing, just like, you know, data centers in the factory. Tick, got that right. Sorry, what was that?
Yes, that's right.
I think if you're focused on your hardware revenue to keep your short-term numbers ticking over, then IoT is a very exciting place and it's an emerging thing. I'm not convinced that you can make an IoT play out of selling hardware, which is what Dell and HPE have done. They've made IoT-centric platforms, announced some special hardware which you could put at the edge. But I think the real is going to be in the software up above, don't you?
I think there's definitely going to be some of that. And maybe to that point, they had to sit through a discussion with a person from GE Predix, which is their IoT SaaS platform from GE, where you can build IoT analytics applications in the cloud. Talking about, you know, working on integrations and partnerships to bring that analytical value. It's not just compute.
Okay, so Cisco bought Jasper to get that software. Some people are going to use AWS's GreenPlum or something like that. No, maybe not. And it's their IoT orchestration, cloud-based orchestration engine. I don't know, should HP have it, or are they going to partner with GE? Because GE is going to partner with Cisco and Dell and everybody else. It seems...
I wouldn't be surprised if HPE's long-term roadmap is going to include some kind of software layer, processing layer, analytical layer that you can do at the edge, because that's the whole point of having the compute right there, is to do that analytics. But they're also going to partner up with as many people as they can.
Yeah, build the supermarket model, as I've said a few times, is that if you've got a supermarket, you need to put stock on the shelves. So you just
anybody
who wants to put their stock on your shelf is the way to go. So
yeah. And last but not least, the third pillar of this global strategy is their Point Next, which is how they've rebranded their services arm. And I was curious to see this because we know, and we've talked about how HP sold off their enterprise services consulting business. It doesn't mean they're getting out of consulting at all. They were very vocal about how this is going to be key to their growth and their strategy, because, you know, they're going to work with partners and customers in their service arm to help people do all this integration, get all this hybrid IT together, build out strategies and solutions. And so their consulting wing is going to be very important to that. And they're rebranding it as Point Next.
See, that's a confusing story because they spun out the whole...
It is confusing.
So you got rid of your enterprise services, but now you have a services division called Point Next?
Yes.
And it's a key pillar?
Yes.
What am I missing? Does it not?
It did strike me as odd. So I was this morning looking through some older stories about the divestiture, and it sounds like I also asked him about this. Why did you, I thought you were out of the services business. They're very clear that they weren't. So maybe there was some, they got into this issue around, we're not in managed services, which is what enterprise services about. And maybe there was some debt associated, like financial debt associated with enterprise service, and they just cut that off and they're starting fresh.
Okay, so they did get very heavily into managed services through the CSC and the Perot systems and you know, all of those. And they had like 5-year and 10-year contracts to run custom data centers, you know, and hundreds of people sitting on customers' premises configuring servers and Windows and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Right.
But now what they're doing is just having a services arm that deploys, HP products, I guess.
Right. They'll do advisory services. They'll do some deployment. They'll help you integrate with partners because they're partnering all over the place with VARs and resellers. And it sounded like they also said they were having an operations wing inside this Point Next, and I'm not clear how they differentiate that between managed services, but there may be some element of them helping you run things. But
Well, I guess the thing is that they've gotten rid of a lot of products, so they really need to reboot most of those contracts.
It could be. Right? So, could be.
You know, when you've just ditched half a substantial several billion dollars worth of software, maybe you need to reboot your services team to focus on the new products that you've got left.
Right. And the last point I want to bring up, this is outside their strategic pillar, but I was obviously curious about their data networking strategy, and pretty much it seems to be we're partnering with Arista for that. That's the message going forward.
Yeah, I saw that confirms what we've talked about over the last few weeks. So, okay, good to get some good confirmation there.
Yeah. So generally speaking, I feel like HPE feels very energized. They've got some direction. They've got some strategy. Now it's up to them to execute. But there was a very healthy, excited vibe coming out of the show.
Excellent. I think that this new focus, like pulling it back down, gives them a chance to sort of take stock. And it's actually before the supermarket was too large. There was too many aisles. And it was a bit like, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe this new focus helps them to get the company pushing in a single direction and go in the right way. I'm broadly positive about the whole thing, yes.
Yeah, and the message discipline, I think, probably indicates an overall organizational discipline underneath that this is how HP is going to drive it forward.
For sure.
All right, so moving on, we also had a new story from Cumulus. They announced NetQ. That's a software agent that runs on Cumulus Linux switches. So we're talking about telemetry again. They can actually stream telemetry off the switch to a database so you can get some system-wide visibility. They're also talking about the ability to validate changes as you do automation and help with troubleshooting. And Greg, you and I both had this Cumulus briefing. What did you take away?
Oh, yeah. So this is Cumulus NetQ. We've seen a lot of this sort of software over the top. And we talked a little bit about Arista EOS and, you know, and then we talked about Aruba and their analytics driven stuff. This seems to be sort of in that same vein. Would that be your sort of take?
I think so. With Aruba, it was very much box by box focus. With NetQ, it seems to me this is more about system wide state visibility. And also a very core component was they're trying to drive automation. They want folks to automate their infrastructure as much as possible. One of the key issues folks have with that is if I push out a config across hundreds of switches and there's something wrong in the config, then I've just killed myself. So they've set it up so that you can integrate with something like Ansible or Chef or Puppet, push a config to a limited set, and then test it, validate it. Is it working? Are we still up? Are we good? And then continue the rollout so that, you know, if there's a mistake or something, you only impact a small number of machines as opposed to killing your entire data center.
Yeah, it's actually an SDN controller model. Up until now, Cumulus has very been much about operating system on switch, one Cumulus. And although they've supported Puppet Chef, Ansible, you know, blah, 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 all the different things.
Mm-hmm.
For automation, you still talk to each switch individually.
That's right.
Effectively, what a lot of people who are doing the automation are beginning to realize is they don't want to program 60 switches or 1,000 switches, even if they're Linux-like. You know, what you really want is to say, in the network, do this. And so NetQ is a step in that direction. So it's a single point at which you configure the network. And then what Cumulus is building into here is a fabric validation system. That is, you send in a request, and then there's various workflows inside of this analysis engine that can say, oh, if you do this, that's going to break, so I'm going to reject that. So it's this idea of an SDN controller, not just passively configuring stuff, but it's much more around this intent and control base. It's not intent like Apstra's intent, but you know, in that same sort of vein.
Right.
To start saying, oh, hang on, we've got some intelligent engine behind. We look at your request. Is that a legitimate request or is that going to break something? Should that be prevented in some way? And that's what this NetQ is going to give you. It's also going to give you some telemetry as well. So because it's starting to attach to all of your Cumulus switches, it can start to bring the data back. So if you had a large collection of Cumulus switches, you can start to get telemetry-based information in a single point, and then you could start to feed that into, you know, an Elastic or a PagerDuty or something like that and start getting monitoring of what your system's actually doing. And that is actually a serious advance. I think you're starting to see Cumulus moving away from the device-centric model and more towards the fabric fleet of switches as a corpus type idea.
I think that's right, and I think it makes sense for Cumulus because they want to be sticky with their customers. They want to add value to this operating system that they're running and give folks a reason to stick around and expand.
SDN controllers are the stickiest thing there is.
I don't know. I definitely don't think they would characterize this as an SDN controller because it's not actually doing the configuration. They're leaving that up to your favorite configuration tool like Ansible or Puppet, but it is doing that state gathering and also a little bit of validation, yeah.
It's a short step, like, you know, a fabric-wide, here it says in the webpage, fabric-wide event change log and find root cause state. So it's a, you know, here's all of your configuration in one place. I can now read it and analyze it and validate it before I actually go and configure it up. It's only one more step before that becomes the configuration gateway or the SDN controller, I would imagine.
Could be. Could be. All right, let's take a quick break. Greg, are you intending to party?
I have every intent to party. We're going to be at Cisco Live in Las Vegas this June, and we'd love to see you with our partners, Apstra, Intent to Party Party. Now, we're going to be there. We're going to have some dinner, some snacks, and some great conversation on Monday, the June 26th at the Border Grill in the Mandalay Bay Hotel. Now, that's right between the conference venue and where you go back to the main Mandalay Bay casino area. So it's really easy to find. It's really convenient, but it is an invitation only event. So if you'd like to participate, make sure you go and sign up for an invitation and have that ready so that we can get you validated and make sure that you're the sort of person that we want to have there. And if you're a Packet Pushers listener, you are that sort of person. Now, basically, it's very simple. Sign up, come along, join us. Ethan and I'll be there. We can have a good argument with you. I'm going to bring my video cameras. So if you want to be on YouTube, and you want to see us off on my YouTube channel, you should probably, you know, make sure you get your face in it. We're going to talk a little bit about Apstra. Of course, we're going to say a little bit about what's sort of awesome about their intent-based networking. And they just recently announced version 1.2 of the AOS, which has got some really cool features. And I'm beginning to see sort of like the hints of this emergence of just where they're going to go and how powerful it's going to be. And I'd like to encourage you to come along. And if you go over to go.apstra.com, that's APSTRA/event-packet-pushers-party, and check out the blog post that goes there, and you can fill out the details there, and there's more information about where it is and all that sort of stuff. Or you can check out the blog post that goes with this podcast on the packetpushers.net website. So go to the network break feed and you'll see you there. And we'd love to see you. Get that invitation in, and then make sure you see us in a couple of weeks. It's only a couple of weeks, Drew. It's only like Monday fortnight.
That's right. Yeah, June 26th is coming up fast.
Excellent. Can't wait. Look forward to seeing you there.
If you haven't requested an invitation yet, go do it now. Thanks, Apstra. Moving on, there's a security startup called Illumio. They just scooped up $125 million in a Series D funding. This round was led by the investment bank JP Morgan, but also included previous backers like Andreessen Horowitz. Illumio, they're pushing a micro-segmentation security model, which is vying, I think, with machine learning and AI as the new security hotness.
Yeah, especially if they're pulling $125 million in a funding round. That's a lot.
A fourth funding round, yeah.
That's a lot of cash, right?
Yeah.
I that's more than you see for an internal funding for big projects inside of big vendors, really.
Yeah.
So that's quite astonishing. So you would have to think that Illumio is looking to be the next NSX or to look for the big exit. You know, they're hunting down a big sort of billion-dollar unicorn type thing, which is great news because I think security needs a shakeup. And we did a show recently on Illumio. So if you're not familiar with them, go and search up on Packet Pusher's website and find the Illumio show, where we were talking to the founders about how that technology works and the way it works. But fundamentally, it's based around this concept of edge control of the network. Micro-segmentation is sort of like table stakes for Illumio, but then what you actually want to do is get it right out to the edge of your network into the devices and the operating systems and so forth. And then they put together this really good centralized control, SDN sort of like platform, so that they can do it. Now, you know, with $125 million, I'm guessing they're going to try and fund up a lot of growth in their sales business. So expect them to be knocking on your door sometime soon. And at the fundamental principle is that IT security is always massively overpriced. So it's a good market to raise funds for because you can get good money for your products if you can get something off the ground.
Yeah, reading the article from Fortune that we pulled the story from, they were talking to the CEO and he was like, we don't actually need the money, but we can raise the money. So we took the money.
Yeah, right. Sure. That's the fashion in Silicon Valley this week is to say, oh, we don't need the money. But we thought, you know, hey, what the hell? They came up, they said, oh, whatever. Yeah, that $125 million is not like, oh, yeah, okay, we'll take it. That's like, we spent some months working on this. A little careful there. I, $10 million, $20 million? Yeah, sure, we'll take it because it's on the table. $125 million, that's like, there's performance goals and maps outs and legal agreements. Yeah.
I'm sure there are commitments attached to that amount of money. No,
never believe what they say. I'm a little cynical there.
Yes, we all should be. All right, sticking with security, Juniper recently announced enhancements to its software-defined secured networks platform. It can now work with Cisco switches to respond automatically in real time to security events. And briefly, what it is the platform combines their cloud-based threat detection with, I think it's called Sky APT. And then there's a premise-based policy enforcement appliance. So if Sky ATP detects a threat, the enforcement appliance can actually talk to the switch and say, let's put this host into a quarantine or knock this host off the network. And so now Cisco can be part of that in addition to Juniper's own switches.
I didn't see this announcement during the week, Drew, so I didn't know anything about it. And I didn't get a heads up from Juniper. And I didn't see anything on Twitter about it, so I actually don't know much about it. I think the only thing that I very quickly sketched out of the site when I read this, about 15 minutes when you dropped it in, because I was jumping from thing to thing this morning, like, you know, it's not like this is the only thing that I do, is that it works with third-party switches, which means Juniper is actually able to manage Cisco switches, which I thought was a point of comedy. In an era where multi-vendor is not actually the du jour, I thought that was quite amusing.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it also, they say that it works with Forescout, who has their ACT for the similar kind of control capability. And last but not least, they also announced that their VSRX, their virtual firewall, can now run in Microsoft Azure.
Okay. I'd need some time to think about this, and I just didn't know that this was happening, so sorry.
No, that's fine. I've actually did get a briefing. I'm going to write it up, so I'll try to dig out some more details as I go.
Cool. Send me over the briefing notes. Maybe I can get more out of it there.
Will do. And then Barefoot, they're back in the news, although the press release they sent wasn't really about anything new. It was more just sort of a summary of here's all the great things that we accomplished, including a test run with AT&T and some interest from Tencent and a few other big Chinese web companies.
Yeah, so Barefoot, of course, with the Tofino chipset, they need to find a market to justify the latest rounds of funding that we've talked about on previous shows. So the press release sort of signals that they're getting some traction. The basic thrust of it was that they did microburst detection and correction through telemetry. So they use a telemetry encoding in the Tofino, detect microbursts, and then correct the microbursts, so manage the buffers. So it's not just about speeds and feeds or whatever.
And this, they did that with a test run with AT&T when they were actually running on a production network doing some traffic monitoring.
And of course, AT&T continues to push its white box agenda. So no let up on that. You know, they acquired Viata last week.
That's right.
Which was sort of a thrust into owning their software and owning their open daylight, owning their SDN controllers and the virtual CPE. And this sort of stuff could keep them moving in that direction. So if the big vendors were hoping that AT&T might give up on open box, on white box and open source, this isn't the week.
Right. No, it is not. The other news that I pulled out from this from Barefoot that I didn't know is that they recently got a new president CEO, who is Craig Barrett, who is coming out of Google. He was running Google Alphabet's access business, which included Google Fiber, and now he's running Barefoot.
Well, that's interesting. If he was focused, you could extrapolate from this that if he was working in the carrier access business, maybe Tofino sees himself as working in the access layer of the service provider, and that's why they hired him.
Could be.
That would not be what I was expecting. I would have expected them to focus on the data center, but maybe the people that are already there can focus on the data center, but this now lets them go and attack the service provider market as a universal data plane. Because of that full programmability in the Tofino, you could do a very high-speed CPE edge, not edge, but just off the core of the core edge, and that would be quite threatening to some people, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Interesting reading of the tea leaves.
Yes, yes. Let me swirl them around a little more.
That's right.
Although in my case, it's coffee stains.
Or yeast from the beer, one or the other.
I'll go either way. I can read them all.
All right, one more quick break to talk about our other sponsor for today, ThousandEyes. As your network expands to include cloud services, ISPs, and third-party providers, your visibility diminishes. And that's a problem when you're running critical applications, websites, and services. ThousandEyes gives you that visibility back because it lets you look into every network that your company relies on. That's the corporate network, the internet, cloud service providers, and you can do it all from one place. They've got cloud agents that are deployed in locations all across the globe, and enterprise agents that provide additional visibility inside your network. And with this vantage point, you get the most complete understanding of your network topology, your dependencies, and your behavior. And how can they help? That means you can piece together multiple layers of network insight, from BGP routing and DNS to web server and layer 3 performance. You can quickly and precisely pinpoint root causes of problems like device faults, congestion, DDoS attacks. And you can also share all this data and insight with vendors and customers to help resolve problems faster. And there's a special offer just for Packet Pushers listeners. You can sign up for a free account at ThousandEyes.com/PacketPushers and choose a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. Start seeing your network like you've never seen it before. ThousandEyes, it's network intelligence you can see. All right, back to the news. Light Reading, they've got a story on some market pushback against the Facebook-led Telecom Infrastructure Project, or TIP, and that's promoting open source technology to spur product development in the telecom industry. Greg, this is a story you dug up. What's going on here?
Well, the thrust of the story is that customers don't believe in Facebook's telecom infrastructure project because they're not paying for it. Which sounds like, oh, whoa, I'm not paying big buckaroony, so it must not be reliable. You know, this open source argument from 2000. And I was like, And I guess if you're in an industry where you're used to paying like a squintillion dollars for a bunch of, you know, commodity silicon and off-the-shelf software, and now all of a sudden they take it away, you'd probably want to look at that with a scant eye. And that, I admire the cynicism, but maybe they need to get this on point. So it is true that Facebook has produced this stuff, and a lot of people are looking at it going, it's too good to be true. I actually don't believe that. I think that Facebook is doing this for purely selfish reasons that most people aren't able to see, and that is they want more bandwidth. They want to see carriers get more circuits out there, and one way to do that is to stop them from wasting excessive funds on what is simply bandwidth and give them open source stuff. And Facebook can do this quite cheaply. They've already got relationships with all the vendors like Broadcom and so forth, and building an open optical switch or a free optical switch like this has been on the cards for 6 or 7 years. I was actually involved in a previous initiative 6 years ago, building a white box optical switch before it didn't quite get the thing. So this sounds to me like somebody at Light Reading believes the standard vendor line of, oh, you know, it can't possibly work because it's not proprietary and it doesn't have a vendor behind it sort of thing. And you read the quotes and it's like, that's what it reads like. talking to customers of big incumbent vendors going, it's too good to be true. Couldn't possibly, you know, we'd have to pay for it and get the support that we want, blah, blah, blah.
Right. A little grousing.
Blah, 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 blah.
All right. You also spotted a story from Data Center Dynamics about a new liquid-cooled compute platform for environments that might be too harsh for your typical fan-cooled machines. And this is also tying back to that whole IoT edge compute thing.
That's right. Well, we're getting down to the skateboarding dog part of the podcast. This is a liquid-cooled compute part. So this is literally a liquid compute. So you take your server, drop it straight in a liquid-cooled platform, and you can stick it under your desk. And then you have no fans, no ambient noise, much better power efficiency. And so this is from a company called Isotope. And it's basically this concept that I keep putting out there of evidence of compute getting smaller faster than workloads get bigger. So my belief is that in generalized terms, silicon get faster quicker than workloads get fatter. And technology like this actually lets you go back to the era of the broom closet or non-traditional data centers that could really change the cost dynamic of on-prem private clouds or colo clouds. So if I could increase the density, reduce the power consumption, I could actually build a private cloud for less money than it would be in the public cloud. So this is the sort of thing I'm sort of casting my eye around on to see what the future of private cloud or hybrid cloud really looks like. I think HPE and Cisco are really missing a trick to say, it's about the environmentals. It's not actually about the hardware. Sometimes it's about being truly creative. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have the link to the story if you want to go check it out and get more details about that. And our last story for today, which is coming fresh from Framingham, Massachusetts, is the latest quarterly switch and router market report from IDC. Dun, dun, dun. And the top line results, the worldwide Ethernet switching revenue for the first quarter of 2017 was up 3.3% versus this time last year. At the same time, routing was down 3.7%. How did they get it so precisely balanced?
Well, I think so. A couple of things here. Ethernet switch market up 3.3% by revenue, not by numbers of switches, by total dollar value. There's a link in the show notes if you want to go and read the source data, which I recommend you do. There's not a whole lot, it's just an excerpt. Of course, if you've got an IDC account, you can get mega big bucks and you can get the whole thing. But they're sort of saying that Cisco is continuing its shrinking. So Cisco shrunk from 55.6 of the market to 55.1 or 3.5% year on year. So there was a time last year where Cisco, right up into the fourth quarter of last year, where Cisco regained its market share, but that's really dropped down in this quarter. I'd say they went out and beat the salespeople with the executive whips and told them to get out there and close some deals. And they closed some deals, and then in Q1, everything fell off a cliff because they brought all the sales forward. That's what I would suggest has happened. Or that would also be called seasonal variation. Service provider routing shrinks 3.7% year on year, which sort of suggests that viewpoint of the service providers are still on hold. They're pulling back on spending where they can and hoarding their cash ready for the 5G investment. There was an article going around this week that the Japanese cellcos have just spent $45 billion collectively to upgrade to 5G.
So, wow.
Yeah. And so if you're looking at routing and everything, you'd be folding it into the, you know, any refreshes or something, you'd be looking at that sort of stuff. So, you know, we saw AT&T buy Viada, Verizon still chasing. There was press releases this week about Verizon still chasing the gray box out of its network. It's telling its vendors and suppliers that it doesn't want gray box, it wants white box, which must be upsetting. So this sort of numbers sort of suggest that whole thing. I mean, obviously with Cisco shrinking just a little bit, they're still the dominant player, you know, don't get me wrong, but it is shrinking by revenue. So overall, Cisco shrunk quite a bit year over year. Oddly, in my opinion, Juniper was up a whole percentage point of market share. They went from 3.4% to 4.3%. So it's quite a lot of growth for Juniper. Some of this, they haven't been able to get good traction in the enterprise, and to see them getting traction back in the market was a little surprising to me because I just wasn't aware that that was what they were doing. Interesting reading to sort of see how the ebb and flow of the market goes for the vendors. It's certainly worth noting that Cisco's continuing to lose ground. I would say that Cisco's having to discount. If I had to guess or make scuttlebutt or make some rumors, and I'll caveat heavily, blah, 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 my guess is that Cisco's having to discount heavily to stay relevant in the market with its current portfolio, and it's not really keeping up as the competitors take bites out of it. We talked about the Rubis switch at the top of the show. That's the sort of thing that can disrupt Cisco's revenue stream.
That's right. And also the consolidation under Extreme of several other competitors coming after that market, some renewed competition there, although, of course, Extreme still has its work cut out for it. But this consolidation, this new competitive energy that's going to, and they're all coming at Cisco.
And don't forget China and Asia with a big push around Huawei and Tsinghua. Tsinghua bought Alcatel-Lucent. Tsinghua got H3C. So a lot of Cisco's revenue out in Asia is under threat. So this is global numbers, not just regional numbers. So just because it's not happening in your hometown doesn't mean it's not happening somewhere else in the world.
That's right.
But yeah. So you've got to have sort of a bigger picture to sort of to grop onto this. But I would expect Cisco to start, is soon going to have to react to this if it wants to stay dominant in the Ethernet switch market or not. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Network Break. Greg, where can folks get more from you if they want it?
Well, I'm continuing to tweet rather obstreperously at Ethereal Mind, at Ethereal Mind on the Twitter. I do post some stuff over on LinkedIn, and I continue to microblog on my website at etherealmind.com and more lengthy pieces at thepackofpushers.net.
And you've also launched a YouTube series called Two Beer Networking.
My YouTube, yes. So I've been playing around with the YouTubes, those of people who've been following along. And if you've got an interest in looking at me get slightly drunk on a couple of beers every Saturday afternoon where I have my day off, you could follow me on the youtube.com/packetpushersnetwork is our YouTube site. And I've got another video going out this week where I get some delectable dark beer from one of my favorite pubs and talk networking.
Right. It's a good watch. It's it makes me want to have a beer too.
Yeah. Speaking of which, it's Friday afternoon.
All right. I'm Drew Conry Murray. I'm on Twitter at Drew_CM, and I also blog at packetpushers.net. Thank you to our sponsors, Appster and Thousand Eyes. And of course, thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you like the show, give us a like on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share it with your friends. And of course, check out our newsletters. That's Human Infrastructure Magazine. We just put out a fresh issue yesterday, and Link Propagation, which goes out every week. You can find out how to sign up for those for free at packetpushers.net. As always, thanks for listening.